నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. హరే కృష్ణ. టుడే వి ఆర్ రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ క్యాంటో 3 చాప్టర్ 26. చాప్టర్ 26 ఇస్ ఎంటైటిల్డ్ ఫండమెంటల్ ప్రిన్సిపల్స్ ఆఫ్ మెటీరియల్ నేచర్ అండ్ టుడే వి ఆర్ ఆన్ వర్స్ 14. ఇట్స్ వర్స్ 14. మనోబుద్ధిరహంకార మనోబుద్ధిరహంకార చిత్తమిత్యంతరాత్మకం చతుర్ధలక్ష్యతే భేదో వృత్యాలక్షణరూపయా మనోబుద్ధిరహంకారరాత్మకం చతుర్ధలక్ష్యతే భేదో వృత్యాలక్షణరూపయా మనోబుద్ధిరహంకారరాత్మకం చతుర్ధలక్ష్యతే భేదో వృత్యాలక్షణరూపయా మన ద మైండ్ బుద్ధి ఇంటెలిజెన్స్ అహంకార ఈగో చిత్తం కాన్షియస్నెస్ ఇతి ధస్ అంత ఆత్మకం ది ఇంటర్నల్ సటిల్ సెన్సెస్ చతుర్ధ హ్యావింగ్ ఫోర్ ఆస్పెక్ట్స్ లక్ష్యతే ఇస్ అబ్జర్వ్డ్ భేద ద డిస్టింక్షన్ వృత్య బై దియర్ ఫంక్షన్స్ లక్షణ రూపయ representing different characteristics. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Translation: the internal subtle senses are experienced as having four aspects in the shape of mind, intelligence, ego, and contaminated consciousness. Distinction between them can be made only by different functions, since they represent different characteristics. Purport: the four internal senses or subtle senses described herein are defined by different characteristics. When pure consciousness is polluted by material contamination and when identification with the body becomes prominent, one is said to be situated under false ego. Consciousness is the function of the soul, and therefore behind consciousness there is soul. Consciousness polluted by material contamination is called ahankara. ఓం అజ్ఞానతిమిరాంధస్య జ్ఞానంజనాశలాకయ చక్షూరున్నిలితం యేన తస్మై శ్రీగురవే నమః. శ్రీచైతన్య మనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూప కదా మహియం దదాతి స్వపదాంతికం ముఖం కరోతి వాచాలం పంగుం లంగయతే గిరిం యత్కృపాతమహం వందే శ్రీగరు దీనతారిణం వాంఛాకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధుభ్యైవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So today we are discussing verse 14 of this chapter, which is entitled Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. The previous chapter was entitled as Glories of Devotional Service. So one may wonder, like from the verse 10 onwards in this chapter, very technical aspects of the creation have started. And similar aspects of creation were already described in the same canto in the fifth chapter during the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya Muni. And now again Srimad Bhagavatam is reiterating the technical aspects of cosmic manifestation or creation. So one might wonder that the previous chapter was describing glories of devotional service, and now why Kapila Muni is doing this? Why is Srimad Bhagavatam again coming back to describing so much technical aspects? And sometimes, you know, we actually want this section to get over because it becomes too much for the mind to understand the different nuances of the material creation and how what combined with what to create what. It actually becomes a little overwhelming to read. So why is Kapila Muni, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, doing this? And Srimad Bhagavatam is Amala Purana. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of all Vedic literatures. It was written by Vyasadev after he had already compiled all Vedic literatures. And yet he was very unsatisfied. He was dissatisfied with his work. And then his guru Narad Muni tells him that you haven't sufficiently glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his pastimes. And that is why there is dissatisfaction in your heart. Even though you have written all the Vedas, so many scriptures, Upanishads, for the betterment of human population. But because you have not covered this one aspect, which is the most important aspect, that is why you are dissatisfied. And then Vyasadev meditates. It is described in the first canto. He then meditates, and then the ripened fruit of all the Vedic literatures, the Srimad Bhagavatam, is written by him. So Srimad Bhagavatam is mentioned to be Amala Purana, Purana which is full of descriptions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then why are these aspects coming up, one may wonder, you know, how the creation had happened and all that. Why isn't just pastimes of the Lord being described? So it is very important for devotees, for practicing devotees like us, to understand that why this section of the creation or this aspect of the Absolute Truth keeps being repeated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srila Prabhupada was explaining, I was listening to a lecture of Srila Prabhupada, and on this particular section, he is describing the aspect of Mahatattva. So as we know from the 10th verse of this chapter, Kapila Dev has started describing what is Pradhan, what is Mahatattva, and now what are the different aspects or elements of Mahatattva. That is what Kapila Dev is describing. So Srila Prabhupada comments in this section on this verse. He says that Krishna or Mukunda is described as Mahatpadam. So we know the famous verse in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Samashrita ye pada pallava plavam, Mahat padam punya yasho murare, Bhavam budhir vatsapadam param padam, padam padam yat vipadam natesham. And Prabhupada is quoting that verse in this section, on the lecture he has given on this section. So Prabhupada is describing that what does the word Mahat padam in this verse mean? So the word Mahat padam in this verse means under whose lotus feet this whole cosmic manifestation rests. So the word Mahat in that famous verse, you know, Padam Padam Vipadam Yat Natesham, the word Mahat is referring to Mahat Tattva. And this whole Mahat Tattva is resting under the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. And one should take the shelter of the boat of the lotus feet of such a Lord, under whose lotus feet this entire cosmic manifestation is resting. So the purpose of initial cantos, we see, is to actually give us this aspect of the Absolute Truth. So Lord Krishna is the one who has created, who is responsible, who is the cause of this cosmic manifestation. And the initial cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam are establishing that fact irrevocably in the hearts of devotees. That Lord Krishna, although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is the cause of all this cosmic manifestation. He is the cause of Pradhan. He is the cause of Mahatattva. He is the cause of all these 24 elements within this creation. And why does the Bhagavatam do that in the initial cantos? So the Bhagavatam does that because so that people don't tend to take Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto very lightly. So in the 10th canto, Krishna's pastimes are described, and we are having the great opportunity to study these pastimes in detail in our Bhaktivedanta course under Keshav Prabhu. So we see the pastimes describe very human as like aspects of Lord Krishna. How he as a baby, you know, how he used to actually go and cry in his mother's lap, how he used to be naughty, how he used to break pots and pans in his house. So simple things which naughty children would do in their childhood. And how he and his friends used to play various games, imitate animals, how they used to steal each other's lunch boxes, joke with each other. So very human-like and very simple pastimes of Lord Krishna are described in the 10th canto. But if one doesn't have the grounding of the first 9 cantos, one may tend to take these pastimes lightly. One may tend to think of Lord Krishna as an ordinary human being. And we see this happens actually in India, because in India there are so many professional Bhagavatas who give recitation, who give Bhagavat Saptas, it is called, the 7-day Bhagavat Saptas. And they usually touch directly on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So although for 7 days they are describing the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, but they do not cover these aspects of the Absolute Truth or these aspects of Krishna, that how he is the cause of this cosmic manifestation and what is this cosmic manifestation made of, how gigantic it is, what a work Krishna has done. They don't cover these aspects, and thus even though they have described pastimes, they have glorified the Lord, but the audience does not get the benefit. Because some of the audience, especially who haven't had any grounding or who haven't had any exposure to the previous cantos, they then tend to take these pastimes lightly. And the Sahajya mentality develops because these pastimes are directly described by these professional Bhagavatas. So we have to understand that even understanding these technical aspects is actually pure devotional service. It is an anga of devotional service. In fact, earlier in the 3rd canto, in the 5th chapter, during the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya Muni, Vidura is actually requesting Maitreya Muni. He is begging, if you read the verses in the 5th canto, he is begging Maitreya Muni, can you please describe this aspect of the Absolute Truth to me? So generally a speaker would like to skip and come, you know, to the rasa, as they say, or to the actual pastimes of the Lord. But Vidura, he's a great devotee of the Lord, but yet he's begging Maitreya Muni, please describe all this aspect of how the Lord has created this cosmic manifestation. And there also in series of verses, then Maitreya Muni describes the whole cosmic manifestation. So acharyas compare, now why Srimad Bhagavatam goes in this progression of first giving all this aspect of the Absolute Truth, describing his greatness, and then coming to his human like pastimes. So acharyas compare the Srimad Bhagavatam to different angas or different limbs of the body. In fact, I was listening to a speaker and he was quoting His Holiness Bhakti Vigyana Maharaj. So Bhakti Vigyana Maharaj is a very like Bhanu Maharaj, he's very knowledgeable in all these shastras. So Bhakti Vigyana Maharaj was describing the progression of different cantos, and we'll just discuss a little bit of snapshot of how each canto is progressing and taking us to the 10th canto and then how it concludes in the 12th canto. So he describes that the first 2 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam are considered to be the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So a person usually stands on his feet. And what do you mean by standing on a feet? That means there is a base. The feet are the base on which the entire body is resting. So in similarly, Bhakti Vigyana Maharaj describes that the first 2 cantos are the base of Srimad Bhagavatam. So what they do is they are actually giving us the basic knowledge required for cultivation of bhakti. That is what is the purpose of the first 2 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. So if we see in the first canto how Srimad Bhagavatam itself was written, why it was written, and then in the second canto we see different aspects of the Virat Rupa. So all this basic knowledge of devotional service is given in the first 2 cantos of Bhagavatam. So once one has created that base, or they have a firm footing in this basic understanding of the devotional service or of Krishna consciousness, one then progresses to the next canto. So in fact, Srila Prabhupada mentions regarding the first 2 cantos, Prabhupada says that I have given all information about Krishna consciousness in my purports in the first canto itself. Prabhupada says, so in one reads the first canto, all information about Krishna consciousness Prabhupada has included. Because Prabhupada knew, he was in a sense of urgency when he was writing the Srimad Bhagavatam. He knew his time is short. He knew that he had you know, not many years left on this earthly planet. So in the first canto itself, Prabhupada has packed basic understanding of Krishna consciousness movement. So then we come to the third canto. And His Holiness Bhaktivigyana Maharaj says that the third canto actually begins with description of Hiranyaksha plundering the universe. So the whole pastime of how Hiranyaksha takes the earth and puts it in the Garbhodaka ocean, and then how Varahadev kills Hiranyaksha, all this description is there. So it begins with the section of Hiranyaksha wanting to enjoy, wanting to plunder this material universe for his own enjoyment. So it talks about Nirishwaravada. Nirishwaravada means this, not Ishwaravada. Ishwaravada means everything is for the enjoyment of Ishwara. But Nirishwaravada means everything is for my own enjoyment. And that was Hiranyaksha mentality. So the third canto describes the concept of enjoying creation without accepting the supremacy of the creator. And that is the mistake which Hiranyaksha was doing. So Bhaktivigyana Maharaj says that one wants to enjoy, like we know the famous example of Ravana. He wanted to enjoy the energy of the Supreme Lord. He wanted to enjoy Sita, but he was rejecting Lord Ram. He did not want to accept the supremacy of Lord Ram. He did not want to accept the master of the energy whom he was trying to enjoy. And therefore we see in third canto, Kapila Dev appears. Bhaktivigyana Maharaj was describing that initially it is describing how a person is enjoying this material creation without accepting the supremacy of the Supreme Lord. And therefore the Lord himself had to appear as Kapila Dev. And then Kapila Dev is establishing Sankhya philosophy towards the end of the third canto. So he is establishing the proper understanding that behind all this creation, which we see, the material elements, the cosmic creation, it is not just meant for the enjoyment of a jiva. Behind all this creation is the Supreme Lord's hand. And this entire material creation is actually meant to serve the Supreme Lord. So even when a jiva comes into this world, he is meant to serve the Supreme Lord using the material energy which the Supreme Lord has created for him. And this is firmly established by Kapila Dev between the 19th and the 32nd chapter of the third canto, Bhaktivigyana Maharaj says. So that is the purpose of the third canto, not that the entire material creation is meant for our own enjoyment, like Hiranyaksha was trying to plunder, but to establish the fact that the material creation has been created by the Supreme Lord. His hand is behind all this and it is meant to serve the Supreme Lord. Then we come to the fourth canto. So the fourth canto describes that how material activities can be used in the Lord's service. So fourth canto has a lot of stress on Karma Yoga. And we see this is being established through many pastimes. So we see the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj. We see the pastime of Prachina, King Prachina Baharishat in the fourth canto. And in the fourth canto, Dhruva Maharaj, through, he wanted actually to attain the Supreme Lord so that he can rule the entire world, or he can become, have a kingdom which was greater than his grandfather's. And then Narad Muni had to instruct him what to do so that he can achieve that goal. So it is all about utilizing your material activities in the Lord's service and then achieving pure devotional service through that, those activities. That is the stress of the fourth canto, Bhaktivigyana Maharaj describes. We then come to the fifth canto. So the fifth canto entirely is filled with instructions. Instructions on pure devotional service. So there are very beautiful conversations in the fifth canto. There are the instructions of Rishabhadev to his sons, headed by Bharat Maharaj. And then there are famous instructions of Jadabharat to King Rahuguna, which bring out different aspects of pure devotional service. So the fifth canto gives us instructions on how to pursue devotional service. It gives, through conversations between great devotees, it tells us certain instructions which we can implement in our life. That's the purpose of the fifth canto. And then we come to the middle, because there are 12 cantos. So the sixth canto is considered the chest or the heart of the Lord. And in the sixth canto, the conclusion of all the processes, of all the instructions that were given in the fifth canto has been given. And what is that conclusion? What is the conclusion of various aspects of devotional service? And that is the holy name of Lord Krishna. So we see that the sixth canto actually begins with the pastime of Ajamil. And what is the purpose of this entire pastime of Ajamil? Many of you must have read the pastime. The whole purpose of the pastime of Ajamil is to establish that how the holy name can deliver even the most fallen person. There is no need, holy name does not differentiate between birth or which varna or which ashram a person is coming from or how elevated one is in his sadhana. The holy name delivers everyone irrespective of their background. That is what is being established in the sixth canto. So even whatever fallen condition one may be in, it doesn't matter. One can even be in a demon body. And again, the sixth canto gives the pastime of Vritrasura. So Vritrasura is actually in a demon body, but he is the pure devotee of the Lord, and he also glorifies the holy name of the Lord. And that is the purpose of the sixth canto, which is the heart of the Lord. And the heart of the Lord is that conclusion of all aspects of devotional service is chanting the holy name of Lord Krishna. Then we come to the seventh and eighth canto. So Bhakti Vijnana Maharaj describes that the seventh and eighth canto are the arms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, what is the purpose of arms? If you usually see, the purpose of arms or the function of arms is giving and taking. That is the function of the arms. So what do arms do? They take away things and they also give things. So we see that Hiranyakashipu, obviously in the 8th canto, the famous pastime of Lord Narasimha Dev is there. So Hiranyakashipu is taking away everything from the demigods. But what is Narasimha Dev doing? Narasimha Dev is coming and he is actually taking everything from Hiranyakashipu and he is giving it back to Prahlad Maharaj. So the function of giving and taking is performed. We also see it in the pastime of Bali Maharaj. We see it in the pastime of the battle between the demigods and the demons. So we see that the demigods lose their power, they lose their potency because they offend their guru. And the demons headed by Bali Maharaj take everything away from them. And then who appears? Vamandev appears. And he again takes everything from Bali Maharaj and he gives it back to the demigods. Again, the pastime of Samudra Manthan is there. So in Samudra Manthan also, the demons, what do they want? They want to take the nectar. But what is Lord's purpose? The Lord's purpose is to give that nectar to the demigods. So he again appears as Mohini Murthy. So he takes the pot of nectar from the demons and he gives it back to the demigods. So the 7th and 8th canto are the arms and they give us the instructions on what happens by, you know, what is the function of the arm in giving and taking. And then we come to the 9th canto. So the 9th canto is actually the neck of the Lord. So just as when the body keeps going up and then it narrows down at the neck and it actually filters out everything and it gives you the essence. So that is the purpose of the 9th canto. So the 9th canto narrows down at the neck and then the appearance of Lord Ram is described. So in the first 8 cantos, there were various aspects, there were various dynasties. If you see, it starts from Manu and the various dynasties in this world were described, in this creation. But then in the 9th canto, it starts with the description of the Surya dynasty in which Lord Ram appears. And then it concludes with the description of the Chandra dynasty in which Lord Krishna appears. So it has narrowed down and now it is giving us the Samam Bonam. It is trying to take us to the Samam Bonam, which will be the 10th canto soon. So that is the purpose of the 9th canto. It's the neck of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then the 10th canto, we all know, is the smiling face of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, where different pastimes of Lord Krishna are described so beautifully. So that is considered the smile of the Lord. And then the 11th canto is considered the forehead. It's compared to the forehead. So just as the forehead beautifies the face, the smiling face of the Lord. So in the 11th canto we see, to beautify this, you know, aspect, the smile of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Uddhav Gita has been mentioned in the 11th canto. The Uddhav Gita is what, you know, Uddhava and Krishna are talking. And it describes the beauty of bhakti, thus adding beauty to the smiling face of the Lord. The whole purpose of Uddhav Gita is to glorify the aspect of bhakti to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then we come to the 12th canto, where the conclusion of the entire 11 cantos are given. And that is considered the top of the head of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Where the Lord, where Sukadeva Goswami then concludes the Srimad Bhagavatam by giving different aspects of Kali Yuga. And he summarizes all the 11 cantos in the 12th canto. So that is how the 12 cantos, Bhakti Vijnana Maharaj says, are compared to the different limbs or different angas of the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So today's verse we come back to in the 3rd canto. So today's verse we are saying, and we started this discussion just to understand what is the purpose of all these technical aspects of creation. So in today's verse, the internal senses are being described. So the internal senses are 4, as it is mentioned over here. The 4 internal senses are the mind, intelligence, false ego, and the contaminated consciousness or chitta. And there is a difference between chit, which is C-I-T chit, and chitta, which is C-I-T-T-A. And the difference is given in one of the scriptures. So when we say sat chit anand, So that chit is different from this chitta. The aspect in sat chit anand, so that sat, that chit represents, sat represents eternality and anand represents knowledge. So that chit is different, that is consciousness, which is different from this chitta, which is contaminated consciousness. And this consciousness has become contaminated by the false ego, which we will discuss further. So just to give a little bit of background, now Lord is the undisputed proprietor. It is described in the fifth canto also. He is the undisputed proprietor of this cosmic manifestation, and he is the seer. He is the seer of all this cosmic manifestation. So he has actually appeared because he knew the cosmic manifestation has now to take place. So he has appeared as Karono Dakshai Vishnu. But he is all alone. None of his other expansions have appeared right now. Only his internal potency or Yogamaya is there inside him. But his external energy is still sleeping. And this is again described by Srila Prabhupada in a lecture he has given on this section. So Prabhupada describes the Lord to a husband. So it is said that the Lord was feeling very dissatisfied. He was feeling incomplete because he actually wanted to interact with all his expansions and his external energy. But they were all in a subtle, like they were all in a sleeping state. So Prabhupada says that just as a husband, when his wife is sleeping, he goes and lovingly wakes up his wife because he wants to have pastimes with his wife. In the same way, the Lord also does that. The Lord wants to generate or wake up his sleeping external energy so this entire cosmic manifestation can then come about. So he actually, what he does was, he glances over Pradhan. Pradhan is the inert matter, and he glances over Pradhan, and it is mentioned that this glance is carried by his external energy, which is Rama. So the glance of the Lord is carried by the external energy, and when the glance is thus carried to Pradhan, it agitates the Pradhan. And it agitates the Pradhan and all the 24 elements which we have now started, which Kapila Dev has now started describing, they become manifested, all the 24 elements. They become agitated. So the three modes of material nature, the five working senses, all these things become manifested. So these 24 elements, when they become manifested by the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is carried by Rama, and Pradhan was inert, but now Mahatattva is being agitated by that glance, the 24 elements become active, and they are the controlling activities of this material world. So what are they? And Prabhupada describes they are called as the Panchabhi. Panchabhi means five elements. So the five gross elements which this material world is made up of, we all know, is earth, water, fire, air and ether. These are the five gross elements. And then Prabhupada describes there are the five tanmatra. Tanmatra is rupa, rasa, gandha, sparsha and shabda. These are the five subtle elements which are then, or the tanmatra which are manifested. So first five gross and then five subtle. So the sky or the ether is called as Shabda. And then air, which was the second gross element, is actually Sparsha. So when Prabhupada says that when a fan is on, we cannot see air, but we can feel it on our skin. We can feel that air on our skin. And therefore air is the gross element and Sparsha or touch is the subtle element within air. The third element is form or Rupa. The fourth element is earth. So within earth is Gandha. And the fifth element is water, and within water is rasa or taste. And then Prabhupada says the 10 dashabhi are manifested, which was in the described in the previous verse. The five knowledge acquiring senses and the five working senses are then manifested. And in today's verse, the four subtle senses are being manifested. So it is said mano, buddhi, ahankaras and chittam. So body is made up of these 24 elements, the gross elements as well as the subtle elements, including mano, buddhi, ahankara and chittam. And there is the 25th element, which is time, which will, the description of time will start from tomorrow's verse. But above all this is the soul, and then above the soul is the super soul. And Prabhupada was describing, so this is proper Sankhya Yoga, to understand that there are 24 elements in this material world, but above all this is the soul and the super soul. And Prabhupada quotes that there is an atheistic Kapila Muni as well, who was prevalent some time ago in the world. And he gave us what is called as the atheistic Sankhya philosophy. And Prabhupada says that the Eastern, the Europeans especially, and the atheistic philosophers and the scientists, they are all very fond of this atheistic Sankhya Yoga or the philosophy which has been given by the pseudo or this false incarnation of Kapila Dev. And why they are fond of that? So Prabhupada says that they are fond of that particular atheistic philosophy which the false Kapila Dev gave, is because the false Kapila Dev did not describe that above the 24 elements is the soul and the super soul. And therefore these people are attracted, because they don't have to, they are just studying the material aspect or the physical aspect of this creation, but they are not going beyond and finding out what is the cause of all this creation. So Prabhupada says there are so many universities which are established to study these 24 gross elements. Scientists are doing research, so many people are doing research on these 24 elements. But Prabhupada always used to say, whenever any university professor used to come or any university students used to come to him, Prabhupada always used to say, where is that department which is talking about the knowledge of the soul? You all keep discussing the knowledge of the 24 elements, but no one is discussing the knowledge of the soul. So Prabhupada says that even, you know, not only physical, there are psychologists who even study the subtle senses. So physical scientists consider the gross senses, and psychologists study the internal senses, which is mind, intelligence. Psychologists are usually dealing with that aspect. But no one is dealing with the soul and the super soul. And that was always Prabhupada's lamentation. Prabhupada always used to chastise university professors. So, and we see that in this particular verse, today's verse, the role of the false ego is being described. And even in the fifth canto of in the fifth chapter, between the conversation of Vaitreya Muni and Vidura, again the role of false ego is given in very great detail. So it is mentioned that as soon as the Mahatattva is created, the first thing which comes out from there is false ego. So the false ego is the first thing which comes out, and it covers everything. And therefore we see that when we have to give up this world, in the Bhagavad Gita it is described that the whole universe is covered by the layers of the gross elements, which is earth, water, fire, air, ether. So it becomes subtler and subtler as we go outward from the material world. The coverings go subtler and subtler, and they go thicker and thicker. So the first layer, it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, is, you know, 10 times thick. The second layer is 10 times thicker than the first layer. So earth, water, fire, air, ether, that is how it becomes subtler. And then it comes to mind, that is the sixth layer, then the intelligence, and the last layer which is covering this material universe is false ego. So the false ego is the thickest layer. It was the first element which came out of Mahatattva, and it is the last thing one gives up when one goes out of this material world. To, you know, yogis specially describes the journey of yogis. So how every element of their body keeps merging into one element when they are giving up their body and traveling through the material universe, the layers of the material universe. But the last, and therefore it is the most difficult to give up, the last aspect, which is false ego. So we will discuss a little bit about false ego today. So false ego plus goodness, it is described in the fifth chapter, and it will also come in the subsequent verses. So the first thing which comes out is false ego, and then the false ego divides itself into three. And these three are the modes of material nature: the mode of goodness, mode of passion, and mode of ignorance. So that is the second thing which is generated after false ego, the three modes of material nature. And then what the false ego does, the false ego combines with the mode of goodness. And what gets generated from that? The mind and the demigods get generated by the combination of false ego and the mode of goodness. And then the false ego combines with the mode of passion. And what generates next? By the combination of false ego and passion, the intelligence is generated and senses are generated. And therefore we see, whenever, you know, we want to enjoy, there is obviously, there has to be an element of mode of passion. Otherwise the senses cannot enjoy. So senses, therefore false ego plus passion actually gives rise to senses, which then want to enjoy being in the mode of passion. And then false ego combines with ignorance, and then sound is generated. So this is how false ego combines with different modes of material nature, and it generates different aspects of this creation. So ahankara, or false ego, as we see, is a very important aspect for devotees to understand. And why it is such an important aspect for devotees to understand? Not only because it has been described by Kapila Dev in this section, and it is part of one of the subtle senses within us, but also because ahankar is the most difficult to give up. The false ego is the most difficult to give up for a jiva, especially even for a devotee. So we see that, in fact, there was a lecture which His Holiness Romapad Maharaj has given on this section. And he describes this aspect of ego. So he is saying that, you know, devotees sometimes misunderstand what is ego, and everything ego is or usually categorized as false ego only. But no, he says there are two aspects of ego. One is true ego and one is false ego. So true ego is actually what a devotee should aspire for. So a devotee does not want to give up ego in its entirety. No, devotee actually wants to give up his false ego. And this false ego is characterized by what is called as aham and mameti principle. So what does aham and mameti principle mean? Aham means I and mameti means everything is mine. So I means I am the enjoyer of this material world, this whole cosmic manifestation, all the 24 elements, all the senses, everything that has generated is for my enjoyment. That is the aham principle. And then mameti is mine, that all these which is there, the Lord has created, it is for me. It is not for serving the Lord. So this aham and mameti principle is the one which keeps one bound in this material world. So unless a devotee takes efforts to actually transcend this false ego and transform it into true ego, one cannot come out of this contamination of the false ego which is there on our consciousness. So the aham and mameti will still remain. But what does a devotee endeavor to do? The devotee endeavors to actually transform that aham from I am the enjoyer to actually I am Krishna's. And what am I? I am Krishna's eternal servant. So that is true ego. So the aham and mameti principle will still stay. Devotees don't give it up altogether. But they transform the aham from I am the enjoyer to aham, which means I am Krishna's servant. And mameti means I am, Krishna is mine. So that is how devotees transform this false ego to true ego. And that is what Romapad Maharaj was saying. So when we say giving up ego is actually giving up the false ego and transforming that false ego into true ego through the process of devotional service. That is what is the aspiration of devotees. So now how do we purify this false ego? The false ego is actually covering our chitta. As I described the difference between chitta and chittam. So chitta is pure consciousness and chittam is contaminated consciousness within us. And how did our consciousness get contaminated? We were all parts and parcels of Krishna. We are all pure. We also have elements which Krishna has in very minute quantity. But we are also Satchit Ananda. But our consciousness became contaminated because of the influence of false ego. So there are different ways purificatory processes which are given for different aspects of life. And the 10th canto in the 5th chapter, in the conversation between Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev, Sukhadev Goswami then describes to Parikshit Maharaj what are the different ways to purify different aspects of this creation. So Sukhadev Goswami says, it's a very nice verse course. He says, Kalena snana shauchabhyam, samskara tapasejiya, sudhyanti dana santushtiya, dravyani atmata vidyaya. So he describes in detail after that. He says, Kalena snana shauchabhyam. So he says, how does one purify one's body, one's gross body? One purifies one's gross body by snanam or by taking a bath. So that is how one purifies one's gross body. And then how does one purify kala? Kala means rocks and all these external things which are there in this world. So these things get purified by the course of time. They get purified like rain falls, and by course of time they generally get purified. Shauchabhyam. Shauchabhyam means how are these different things like pots and pans, all these other aspects of material creation purified. They are purified by washing and cleansing. That is the method of purification for pots and pans. Then samskara. So how is birth purified? One's birth is purified by performing different samskaras. And therefore we see Srila Prabhupada throughout the Bhagavatam in his purports. He gives stress to so many samskaras. He says that before the parents actually conceive a child, there are so many samskaras which the parents should do. There is the Garbhadan samskara which the parents do even before conceiving. And then once they have conceived in the 7th month, there is another samskara which is done for the purification of the soul. And after the child is born, again there are so many samskaras which the child goes through. So these are all extremely necessary to purify your birth and to become, you know, purify the consciousness. And then he says tapasejiya. So what is purified by tapasa or austerity? The senses. So we saw how false ego combines with passion to generate the senses. And the senses always want to be in the mode of passion and enjoy, enjoy, enjoy in the aham mameti principle. But how to purify these contaminated senses is through tapas, tapasya or austerity. By having determination and by performing austerity, one can purify the senses. And then ijyaya. Ijyaya is purified by dana. So it says, shudyanti dana. So how do you purify? Ijyaya means all your possessions or all the wealth that you possess, all your assets. All that is purified only if you do charity. So unless a person does charity, his wealth and his possessions are going to stay contaminated. And they will bind him to this material world. And then how is the mind purified? So santushtiya. So the mind is purified by satisfaction. If one is always self-satisfied, his mind will be purified. His mind will not give him trouble. His mind will then not act as his enemy. And then the last one he says is atmata, vidyaya. So how is the soul purified? The soul is purified by self-realization. That is the purification process meant for the soul. So this is a beautiful verse which Sukadeva Goswami tells Parikshit Maharaj in the 10th canto in the 5th chapter. So to purify the soul or the contaminated consciousness which we have, the process is internal. For many of the other purifications, the process was external. But for purification of the soul, the process is completely internal. And there is a very famous verse which is quoted in the pastime of Jhadabharat and Rahuguna. How to purify the consciousness internally, how to get rid of this false ego internally, and how to have that Shuddha Chitta coming out. So there is a very famous verse. It says, Jhadabharat says, Rahuguna eta tapasana yati na chejyaya nirvapanad grihadva na chandasa naiva jalagni surye vina mahat pada rajobhishekam. So what does he saying? What is Jhadabharat saying? He is saying, O King Rahuguna, that one can smear the body. How does one purify? One can smear the body with the dust of the lotus feet of a great devotee. And only then one can realize the absolute truth. So there is no other chance of realizing the absolute truth unless one has smeared. Mahatpada rajobhishekam. Raja means dust and mahatpada means the feet of the lotus feet of the feet of the pure devotees or great devotees of the Lord. So unless one has smeared themselves with the dust of the great devotees of the Lord coming out of their feet, there is no chance of realizing the absolute truth. And then Sukadeva Goswami rejects, or Jhadabharat actually rejects other processes. He says one cannot realize the absolute truth through Varnashram Dharma. So one cannot realize through observing strict celibacy. One cannot realize that. And there is a famous pastime in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to do all these kirtans in Shriva Sangam, we know. And there was once a very strict brahmachari who wanted to witness Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So he requests Srivas Thakur that, can I please come and see? I'm so attracted. I have heard that you all do such nice kirtan. And there is so much nice glorification happening of the Lord. So I want to just once come and see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing. So Srivas Thakur knew Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't like. He doesn't like any unqualified person entering. So he was very scared. But this brahmachari, seeing the qualities of the brahmachari, Srivas Thakur got tempted. Because this brahmachari was following not only strict brahmacharya, but he was very austere. He used to only survive on milk. He was not having absolutely anything else. So Srivas Thakur agreed and he hid the brahmachari behind a door. And then when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started his kirtan, he stopped the kirtan midway and he said that there is something which is missing. I am not feeling the nectar, or I'm not feeling the ecstasy which I usually feel. And then he catches hold of Srivas and he says that, is there anyone here who is not meant to be here? Because that is creating a disturbance and it's not allowing me to feel the ecstasy. And Srivas Thakur was really scared because he thought he's in trouble now. So with faltering voice, he reveals to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said that, no, it is not that someone who's not meant to be here is here, but there is this brahmachari whom I allowed to come. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he brings the brahmachari out and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gets so angry. He says, why did you allow him to come? You know that this is meant only for intimate devotees. And then Srivas Thakur says, but this brahmachari is very elevated. He is following strict brahmacharya and he is so austere. He just drinks milk. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejects that process. He says that one cannot understand me just by their brahmacharya or just because they are very austere and drinking milk. You need to have a heart filled with devotion and love. Only then one can understand. And he drives that brahmachari out from there. Obviously, but then the brahmachari was very dejected, but still he was feeling in his heart, he was feeling grateful that at least for some moments he could witness Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And seeing that, Lord Chaitanya then again readmits him, seeing the qualities, the gratitude in his heart and the love he had developed in his heart. So, but the essence of this pastime is that, and what even Jadabharat is telling to Rahuguna, that one cannot obtain the absolute truth just by performing strict varnashram, like following strict brahmacharya, or strictly following the rules and regulations of grahasthashram, or leaving one's homes and going into vanaprasthashram, or following strict sannyas. One cannot obtain or understand the absolute truth. Neither can one understand the absolute truth. It says, na chandasa naiva jalagni suryer. By immersing oneself in cold water in the winter. No, one cannot understand the absolute truth like that. Neither can one understand the absolute truth by sitting in the scorching sun, jalagni suryer, sitting in the scorching sun and lighting fires all around. So much austerity, sitting in a scorching sun and having fires also around. But that is not the process to understand the absolute truth. So absolute truth is only revealed to one who has smeared his body with the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees and who has obtained the mercy of the devotees. So bathing, so you know, taking this rajobhishekam, abhishek means, but abhishek of dust. So what does it mean by this bathing? And which aspect of our body do we have to bathe with this dust? Do we just actually take the dust and smear it on ourselves? And yes, that is a bona fide process. We see devotees, especially Prabhuji's, you know, sometimes fighting to take the dust off the lotus feet of other devotees. And there is, you know, there is always this resistance. And there was once a story, it's a small pastime that happened. Once a devotee was like, usually, you know, trying to take the dust of another devotee's lotus feet. And he always had that habit of trying to take the dust of devotees. And obviously, devotees are humble, so they wouldn't allow that to happen. But one devotee, I think, got tired in the end. So he actually showed his feet and he said, okay, take the dust. And then that devotee was not wanting to take the dust because the whole rasa changed. We want to take the dust only when it's difficult to obtain. But if somebody is giving, okay, take my dust, then it becomes hard. So which aspect of this bathing are we talking about? And which purification are we talking about by this bathing of the dust of the lotus feet of devotees? So we are talking about clearing up the misconception which is there because of the false ego on the pure consciousness. Or the false ego which has contaminated the pure consciousness by covering it. So it is mentioned that this Mahatpada Rajobhishekam, if one actually takes bath in the dust of the lotus feet of these great devotees, one can clear the misconception of false ego slowly. And one can get then realize his true consciousness or the true ego which is Aham and Mameti, that I am the servant of Krishna and Krishna is mine. So that is possible only from within. And how does one do? How does one take that dust and put it on the consciousness? Obviously, that's not possible. So it is described in the fourth canto, in one of the conversations or one of the verses which Prithu Maharaj says, where he says that what it means to take the dust of the lotus feet of devotees is actually to take the particles of dust or the saffron which is emanating from the lotus mouth of the devotees. So because these great devotees are always serving, they have realized their true ego. They have realized that their purpose is to serve Krishna. The entire creation is meant in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. So because they are so firmly attached to the service of the lotus feet of Krishna, they have absorbed the particles of saffron which is there at the lotus feet of Krishna. And because they have internalized that, whenever they speak the glories of the lotus feet of Krishna, Prithu Maharaj says that this dust in the form of saffron comes out of their mouth. And this dust should enter the ears. And that is how we do this abhishek, Mahatpada Rajobhishekam. So we are taking it through our ears, the dust which is emanating in the form of the particles of saffron from these great devotees' mouth. We are allowing it to enter our ears, and through that, Shravanadi Shuddha Chitti Karilo Udai, through that we are actually purifying our consciousness and purifying the false ego. So that is the only way that we can purify the false ego, by Shravanam of the dust. Or Shravanam from the lotus mouth of these great devotees and smearing the body with the dust of the great devotees. So this dust which men administer through the ears will then take away the conception of the false ego, and it will, our chitta or our shuddha or pure consciousness will then shine forth, and we will realize that we are the eternal servants of Krishna and this entire manifestation is meant to serve Krishna. So that is the one of the processes which is described to purify a false ego. And I'll conclude the class here if there's any comments or questions or corrections. I know it was a technical class, but
yes. Thank you very much for the excellent first of all. I heard in one conversation, just a comment, that Srila Prabhupada gave lecture here, and one of the professors from Melbourne University, I think his name was Dr. Patak, he heard the lecture, and after the lecture, Prabhupada lecture, he mentioned this to Srila Prabhupada, that we are so lucky that you are here in Melbourne to give us the best of your lotus feet to your mouth.
Hey.
So after the next conversation, Srila Prabhupada went up into the room and then he called. Who is that gentleman? Call him. And he gave mercy to you.
Hey. Thank you for sharing.
Very, very important aspect what Guru Maharaj is saying. We almost remember this. Thank you very much. My own question is, you were telling about the various austerity, like Garavadik, you know, before birth of the child and all that. Can you give a few more austerities in those
samskaras?
In those
I don't remember the entire list, Prabhuji. It is there in the scriptures. But I know Garbhadan Samskara is before the parents conceive the child and where they have to purify their consciousness. Parents actually chant, in ISKCON, in Krishna consciousness movement, we say the parents should chant 50 rounds on the day they are going to conceive, have a very nice consciousness atmosphere, Krishna conscious atmosphere in the house. Actually invite Vaishnavas, feed them, take their blessings and then, you know, do the act of conceiving the child. So that is Garbhadan Sanskara. And then in the seventh month, there is, I don't remember the name of that ceremony, where they the wife sits and the husband, yagya is done and the husband does a parting and he puts something in his... Yes, they put that. So that is the seventh month samskara, which is done again for the purification of the child who has taken shelter in that womb. And then as soon as the child is born, there is the Jatakarna Samskara. There is the name-giving ceremony also is actually performed as a samskara where a yagya is done. Like Gargamuni did for Krishna and Balaram. And then 11th day, there is one more samskara which is done. And then there is the Yagnopavit Samskara, which is the second birth which is given to the child. So different, and even when the child first starts his schooling or his vidya, then there is some Akshara Abhyasam. That is also one samskara which is done to purify the knowledge which he will then obtain. So I don't have the entire list, but these are the different samskaras which are done. Even marriage is considered to be a samskara, Vivaha Yagya. So that is also a samskara which is to purify the consciousness before the husband and wife unite as a married couple.
You mentioned also 10th canto, 50th, what is the verse number? 10.5.4.
These purificatory samskaras, which we, the question is that when these samskaras or yagyas are performed, they are usually performed for demigods, but we usually don't worship demigods as devotees. So then how are these samskaras performed? So when we mention about these samskaras, which are performed throughout before some conception till, you know, the person is living in this world, these samskaras in the Vaishnava tradition, they are performed for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they are not performed for the demigods. And if you see Gangeshwar Prabhu performs many of these samskaras, like, you know, even the shaving of the head, that is also one samskara they do. They do a yagya. So he always worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He keeps a small altar. You must have seen Gangeshwar Prabhu do that. He actually brings his shaligram. He keeps Prabhupada and Guru Parampara, all these photos he keeps. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always there. And whatever samskara do, when the fire is a representation of the Supreme, it's the tongue of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So whatever oblations are put in the fire, they ultimately go to the satisfaction of Yajna Purusha, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through the medium of the fire, which represents the tongue of the the Supreme Lord. So any samskaras which are done in the Vaishnava tradition are always performed for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not for the demigods. So yes, there are yagyas which are performed to thank the demigods. Like Nanda Maharaj, we know in the 10th canto, the pastime is there. Nanda Maharaj was going to perform such a big yagya for the satisfaction of Indra, to thank him for giving rains. So yagyas are performed for demigods, and that is done usually by the people who are, you know, in the material world, who are karmakandis and all. They perform these yagyas. But as devotees, we don't perform separate yagyas to satisfy the demigods. So when you ask the difference between samskaras and yagyas, yagyas will be part of the samskara. So as part of that samskara, let's say the shaving ceremony, so as part of that samskara, yagya is one aspect. And that every yagya is not done for demigods. There are yagyas which are done for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So the difference is when, you know, people, normal people who are not aware of Vaishnavism or who are not aware that Supreme Personality of Godhead is Lord Krishna, they would perform yagyas for, as you said, there are so many pujaris who will come and do pujas and yagyas for the satisfaction of demigods. And it's not wrong. But as devotees, we know that when the famous verse, yatha taror moola nischanena. So if we satisfy the roots of the tree, the branches, twigs, leaves, everything is automatically satisfied. So as devotees, we always perform yagyas for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. We don't perform yagyas for demigods.
From your question, how Lord Shiva removed, he is a demigod.
How Lord Shiva?
Lord Shiva removed his false ego.
How Lord Shiva removes the false ego? Lord Shiva's position is very unique. So when he comes to this material world, his name is Rudra. And that time he performs the act of being a demigod. But his original nature is, in his original form, he is Sadashiva in the spiritual world. And Sadashiva is actually non-different from Narayan. So Shiva Tattva is not exactly Jiva Tattva, nor he is Vishnu Tattva. So he is not considered a demigod at all. Okay, Prabhuji, your turn.
How do you explain that how Mahavishnu glances over to Ramadevi? How can we understand that Ramadevi is a different Mayadevi, or Ramadevi is two different energies of the Lord?
Ramadevi is Mayadevi. That's the external energy of the Lord. So Maya is a very general term. It's called Mahamaya. It's a general term, and Mahamaya is called by different names. Rama, Parvati, all these things are different names of Mahamaya. So that Mahamaya carries that glance, and then it goes into the Pradhan, and then it agitates and makes it into Mahatattva. So yes, it is a different name for Mahamaya. So this is a very technical aspect. It was covered in the 5th chapter of the same canto in the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya Muni, and it is to come. If you read this chapter through, ahead it will come that how the false ego combines with mode of ignorance to create sound, and how in the sound ether, it means ether, and how in the sound and ether there are different aspects of ignorance which are there. So I'm not too much across that, but it's coming in the next few verses. Kapila Dev is going to describe that to Devahuti. Seek blessings of all the Vaishnavas that I can become sincere like all of you in my Krishna consciousness. Please bless me. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Yeah.